Welcome back to The Digital Dive, the conversation about tech. I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Darsh Kathani. How are you doing this week?
Oh, thank you. You're hyping me up. See, we talked about this last week too. We said that Jacqueline's going to hype me up this time. And that was a good hypo. I like it. I'm doing pretty okay. How are you?
Good.
How's the day been?
Good. I got to say, Darsh and I talked a little bit before we started recording, and Darsh just told me that he's getting a little into hockey.
Yes.
Give us like the 20-second breakdown. Like, what are the steps that you've taken to get into hockey so far? For anyone that doesn't know, Darsh is from Canada.
Yes. So I am from Canada. I am from Ontario. Basically, my roommates this year at school, they're all really, really into hockey. And they were like, okay, we got to get you into one sport because I'm not very into sports. So because it is cold outside and we need some type of activity and exercise during COVID, we've been going to outdoor skating rinks, of course, following public guidelines. But we've been going to outdoor skating rinks and we've been playing hockey there. Or like, they've been playing hockey. I've been trying to get into hockey. So they're trying to teach me how to play. I already know how to skate. So those two in combination, I feel like would be really cool if they're teaching me how to play and then I'm also skating with them. And it's just something fun to do. And then on top of all of that, the actual NHL season is back. So we're watching the games every night. So it's been pretty cool. It's been pretty fun. Those are the steps I've been taking to get more into it. And it's been pretty fun so far.
That's so sweet. Yeah. I feel like I was saying to Darsh that I think hockey is just like so much cooler than football, which is like pretty prominent in the US. Hockey, I feel like, is like very Canadian, even though we have it. Like, I don't personally know any friends that actually play. So it's sick that you're like getting into it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Literally so many of my friends play hockey. So it's very, very interesting whenever you get to talk about it.
Yeah. I wonder if like other Canadian YouTubers play hockey, like Peter McKinnon or the TMS guys. It feels like it's like very prominent in Canada.
Oh, 100%. I think that definitely someone like the TMS guys, I feel like they'd probably play hockey. Peter McKinnon, I would be very shocked to hear if he didn't play hockey or if he wasn't, or he didn't know how to skate or something like that. I feel like that's like a very, it's very Canadian. It's very, very Canadian. He's all about flying the flag. So I think that'd be really interesting to see. So Peter McKinnon, if you are listening to this episode, please tweet at us at Digital Dipod. Let us know if you play hockey or you skate.
Yeah, let us know. It's like a burning question now. Yeah, otherwise, for me personally, I'll give you an update. I worked on the S21 Ultra camera comparison this week, the first one.
Yes.
The embargo lifted on Thursday, so the subscription box had like an influx of videos. Certain people were like screenshotting me like my video amongst others, and there was like 60 videos. So definitely was kind of crazy. And with embargoes, videos all tend to do a little worse because there's just so many options. But surprisingly, it's doing pretty well. So not like amazing, but it's the watch time and click through, whatever. All of the YouTube analytics stuff is good. And then more importantly, the results were super interesting. So I kind of thought that we could talk a little bit about S21 Ultra with like the camera just in general. And then also a little bit more of like the comparison to the 12 Pro and maybe like which one's the best one.
100%. I think that's actually a really, really, really good comparison. And I think if you haven't already gone and checked out Jacqueline's video on the S21 Ultra and its camera, the camera comparison between, what is it, all three phones?
It's Pixel 5, S21 Ultra, and iPhone 12 Pro.
Oof, okay, that's a stack list. So go and go check that out. It's going to be linked in the show notes down below. But diving in with the S21 Ultra, Jacqueline, so what are some main things that you notice? So if you guys are unaware, I do not actually have my hands on the S21 Ultra, so I am looking at pictures that everyone else has taken, and I have my own opinions on them. But Jacqueline, you've actually been playing with the S21 Ultra. You've used the camera. You've been really in deep with it. How's that been going for you?
Yeah.
How have you found the camera?
So I did two camera comparisons. Only one of them is live right now. By the time this podcast goes live, I think the second one will be live. It depends on how efficient I am with editing it. But the second one that I'm working on right now is S21 Ultra versus S20 Ultra versus Note 20 Ultra. So like all the Ultras. And the reason for that is that the S20 Ultra had some major focus issues last year, which like everyone I think is pretty aware of. There was the fringe issue. There was the fact that it wasn't that fast with autofocus. The really high megapixel sensor led to it being harder to get a lot of things in focus.
Yeah.
So that was the main thing that I wanted to test with the S21 Ultra. Quickly on that, it's worth watching a video if you're interested because it's a little bit more nuanced than I'm about to make it. But basically, they've included a mode called Focus Enhancer.
Okay.
And Luke created an incredible animation for this for the video to help like visualize it. But when you get close enough to a subject, it notices that you're getting close to the subject and it actually switches to the ultra-wide lens. And it doesn't change what it looks like on screen in terms of like how wide it is. They obviously crop in. There is a little bit of perspective warping, but they do that because the ultra-wide has an f2.2 aperture and also a smaller minimum focus distance. So that allows things to be in greater focus. So like if I got really close to like a flower without this mode on, it may be like a couple petals are in focus. But with this mode on, like the entire flower would be in focus.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sick.
So it's a little not perfect. Like there are some issues with it, but on the whole, I think it's really interesting. The one last thing I'll say, Darsh, before I want to throw it over to you to get your thoughts, is that the iPhone 12 Pro didn't need to do this. So yeah, it's cool that they've created this mode, but it does have its compromises and the iPhone 12 Pro doesn't do this and it still gets more of it in focus than the S 21 Ultra would if it didn't do it. So it's a weird workaround. I would have loved if they kept like the variable aperture from like 2 years past where you could actually switch the aperture on the primary.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're referring to.
But what did you think of the samples that you saw? Because you've obviously looked at a lot of them.
So the samples I've looked at, I think have been really cool in terms of the zooming. I feel like that's one of the things that maybe wasn't as highlighted or as much as I thought would be highlighted. I thought that the zoom wouldn't be as big of a feature as it is. And this year is clearly shown to be doing really, really well. So for example, like The Verge has an entire list of samples online. And if you haven't seen Jacqueline's video or checked out that list, go check them out because the samples are really, really good at actually seeing what that differential is when it comes to comparing the S21 versus the iPhone 12 Pro. And so for myself, when looking at it, I thought it was really interesting because the S21 tends to kind of make all the pictures a little flatter in terms of the brightness. So the brightness is more uniform throughout. I feel like there's less shadows and everything just feels a little bit more highlighted and less contrasty. And on top of all that, I think this the zooming in, as a whole is just proven so well how good it does. 10 times zoom on the S21 Ultra versus the iPhone 12 Pro Max. It's clear as day which one is actually better. I don't know if that was
yeah,
kind of random.
No, that wasn't random at all. That's like, I think one of the most important things actually, because that you're 100% right. When you look at the zoom, that is...
Yeah, you can see the zoom is so much clearer in the S21 Ultra. I thought that it's incredible.
Yeah, that is where there's no comparison. A lot of the camera comparisons, it's like one shot will go to the S21 Ultra and then the next shot will go to the iPhone 12 Pro. But in this, the zoom is just much better. And what they're actually doing for anyone that like wants to get a little nerdy about it is they have two telephoto lenses. So they have a 3x and a 10x. And in between 3 and 10, you are using digital zoom. But on another phone, let's say a phone from a couple years ago that didn't have a telephoto, when you zoomed in, it was all digital. So it would basically just be cropping an image from the standard lens.
Yep.
With this, when you go to like 10 times, it's not cropping 10 times into the standard lens. It's physically switching to a new lens. So the sharpness is just much greater. Whereas the iPhone 12 Pro also has a telephoto, but it's not nearly as close. So when you get to things like 10, 20, 30x, the iPhone can't even do more than 10x, but the S21 Ultra can, and it looks so sharp. It's like incredible. Even 100 times, which normally is like kind of a gimmicky, is actually semi-usable. Plus, it has a new feature where it will stabilize the image. So taking something like, let's say that you're in New York City and you're taking a snap of like the Empire State Building and you're super far away and you frame it or whatever, the phone will detect that what you're trying to take and it will stabilize it. So it's much easier to get the frame because oftentimes with 100 times, if you have any handshake, it completely changes what the frame looks like.
100%. Okay, but one thing I did want to talk about and I did want to bring up, okay, maybe this is just me, but how incredible is the night vision for the Galaxy S21 Ultra?
That also is unreal. I mean, the Pixel 5, right, is like normally the phone that is like the gold standard for night sight.
It's gold standard. Exactly. Yeah.
It looks so much worse. I took a photo on both the Pixel 5 S21 Ultra and the iPhone 12 Pro, and the S21 Ultra was both the sharpest and also it had the least amount of noise in comparison to the other two.
100%. Like I'm looking at a night mode photo from the S21 Ultra versus the iPhone 12 Pro Max, and it's that of a bicycle. And I'm looking at it and I see the bicycle is literally, you can see the grain and you can see just how dull everything looks. The S21 Ultra looks almost like it was taken, it looked like it was taken in almost ideal lighting conditions. Like on the iPhone, you can tell it's not ideal lighting conditions whatsoever. But for some reason, the S21 was able to brighten up the overall image. And I guess that lack of saturation, that uniform brightness that I was talking about earlier, kind of shows here in night mode where it just really does kind of illuminate the picture. And it makes it slightly, ever so slightly cooler in terms of the color profile. All those things in combination with one another, and also just generally like how sharp and crisp it is just, it's incredible. I'm so impressed by these samples.
Also, it does really well for portrait modes and stuff like that. The two things that I think are like the clearest things that it's still struggling a little bit with is one, skin tone, and two, video. So with skin tone, in the past, they've had major skin smoothing where you'll take a photo, you'll have skin smoothing off, or you'll have beauty mode off, and then it will still be super smooth. And it could be because of maybe the beauty standards of where they're selling the phone to. That's like what some commenters are speculating. I'm not sure. Obviously, in America, I'm not sure like what the beauty standards are in Asia, for example, where a lot of the phones are sold. But it did that. And then it also went to a much more yellowish pale hue for skin always, which is like just super weird. I don't know why it would do that. So it still has that. The skin smoothing has gotten much better. It's still a little soft, but the skin tone is just off. Like when you look at it in comparison to like real life, it looks a little bit more yellow. But in the camera comparison that I did, the iPhone 12 Pro also is not always perfect. Some of the time it went to like a pink hue for the skin because it really tries to make you like look tan and peachy.
Hmm.
And the Pixel 5 adds a ton of contrast. So like my hair looked much darker in almost every photo of the Pixel 5. So that's like the one thing I would love if they like fix the skin tone. I think it's a little bit more consistent on the iPhone 12 Pro, even though it's not always perfect. And then the second thing is video. So they've made huge strides with photos. A lot of the time it takes a better photo in comparison to the 12 Pro. But the video, although it has a diverse feature set like director's mode and 8K video and 24 frames per second, it's not as good. It doesn't look as professional or clean, especially for social media. Like if you take an Instagram story on the S21 Ultra, you could tell that you're using Android Instagram and not iOS Instagram.
But okay, but that's a whole different debate there, right? It's like red as well. Like when you talk about Samsung or using Android Instagram or Snapchat, you're noticing a huge differential in terms of like the quality and performance of the camera, because the way that these apps like Instagram and stuff have been made is that they're essentially screen recording and screen mirroring the viewfinder from the camera app. So it'll never be like the full quality of whatever you're taking. Those full quality pictures you'll get if you take in the camera app itself and then upload them to Instagram.
Even still, I think it's maybe something to do with like Android processing. Like Instagram just does not look as good on Samsung phones, even though they have an Instagram mode. Like they introduced an Instagram mode with the S10, which is a while back. I guess Instagram just doesn't put as much time into optimizing it because there's so many different Android phones. But even in the native even in the native camera app, the video is still different. Like it's pretty good and the autofocus is amazing, but video is just not as consistently good as it is on like the iPhone.
Just in general, the Samsung phones do really, really well when it comes to photos. Videos is somewhat iffy, and iPhones will always kind of not reign superior, but for the most part, they do incredible when it comes to video. And it's really hard to compete with what they have going on there. I can't even put my finger on exactly what it is. But some things that Samsung has introduced this year, like director's mode and shooting, the ability to shoot in full RAW, whether it be photo or video, is awesome. I think that's such a good step that they've taken in terms of kind of making their camera so much more universal. And even though it's not as, I guess, well implemented and optimized for social media such as Snapchat or Instagram, it still does a good job, I think, compared to most.
It's maybe the best Android phone for Instagram, maybe the Pixel 5, like probably tied, but even natively, it's different. I don't really know. I think a lot of it is color science. And I also think a lot of it is like the way it stabilizes its shots. Like the Samsung Galaxy is super steady mode, which is incredible and definitely better than the iPhone. I did a test last year before the pandemic, like literally 2 weeks before like lockdown began, where I sprinted down like a busy sidewalk. You could not look at that on the iPhone. It was so shaky. This is like the iPhone 11. And on the Samsung phone, it was incredibly stable. So their feature set is just much more diverse across the board in comparison to Apple's, but Apple nails the fundamentals in a way that Samsung just doesn't always. The fundamentals of skin tone, of exposure, of color consistency among lenses, of video quality, all those fundamentals are nailed on the iPhone, whereas S21 Ultra kind of gives you the extras like the zoom, the 8K video, the director's mode, which all are valid. And then it also gives you pretty good images and sometimes better images than the iPhone, but just a less consistent experience overall.
100%. And I think that's where the consumers and you guys yourselves go watch these videos, go check out these articles, check out all these different cameras, and check and see how you like the samples. Tweet at us. Let us know exactly what you guys think about the cameras, what's going on with those, what are your thoughts? Would you guys be interested in picking up the S21 or would you pick up the iPhone 12 Pro when it comes to cameras or even the Pixel 5? Let us know and tweet us at Digital Dive Pod. 100%. We will definitely make sure to check all those out and maybe we'll talk about them in the next episode. The S21 Ultra is a fantastic phone, but you know what happens with every single phone that is just honestly kind of detrimental for me whenever I'm transferring over?
What?
This is a really bad transition.
I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. Transferring my
music. Yeah, okay. So basically for everyone who caught my really, really bad transition, what I was trying to say was, whenever I ended up testing out a smartphone, I found myself constantly looking for easier ways to transfer over my music. And at first, when I didn't have a streaming platform, it was honestly the worst thing in the world. And then I got a streaming platform that was Spotify. Then I ended up switching to Apple Music. And believe me, putting Apple Music on an Android device is probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. I don't know why there's so many extra menus you have to go through on an Android phone to download specific playlists.
Wait, really?
For music and stuff like that.
Don't they have the Apple Music app?
They do. The Apple Music app, I don't know why, but it seems so... For me, at least, I feel like it feels so much harder to use on an Android phone than it does on my iPhone. Maybe there's optimization because that is the way Apple is. But for some reason, it just feels so much harder to like navigate. It's just rough. But something that we talked about last week and we very briefly touched on was the fact that I switched from Apple Music to Spotify. Again, like I switched back. That's something that we wanted to talk about this week.
This would have been such a good clip for YouTube. Why I switched to Spotify.
Well, we can definitely think about making maybe a clip later.
Well, we don't have our video on right now. This is like an ultimate bummer in real time. I'm just realizing this. But regardless, for people listening, yeah, why'd you switch? Because I remember we talked about it like 2 months ago and you were still like kind of on the Apple Music train.
So basically it was like this. as much as Apple Music, I think, is one of like a really, really great software when it comes to streaming music, I found just some inconsistencies. I found it was just kind of, it had a disconnect from everything else I was using in my life. The inability to connect it with my Google Home was huge, because the big thing is, so as I mentioned before, the Google Home automation that I have is just so important to me, and it becomes so useful in my everyday life that being able to kind of turn on my music in the morning with Spotify was ideal. And don't get me wrong, now this was like a very unique situation. I've had both Spotify and Apple Music for the past 2 years. I've just been paying for Apple Music, and my parents have a family plan for Spotify.
Oh, okay.
So I've had both accounts, and I was paying for Apple Music on my own, and I had the Spotify and I used it with my Google Home, but not having all my music on either or platform was just kind of keeping me feeling unfulfilled. And so I decided to move all my stuff over to Spotify, because I felt like I really wanted to be able to keep it in line with my whole home automation setup. So now when I come home, it plays me music when I come back. I tell Google I'm home. In the mornings, it'll turn on music for me and sets up with my bathroom Google Home and my normal Google Home that's next to my bedside. So I have stereo audio and I'm listening to both devices at the same time. And it's fully controllable from my computer. It's just, it works so much more seamlessly. But at least, okay, that's at least just my opinion. So I like Apple Music, but I'm switching over to Spotify. Jacqueline, so you're a Spotify user, correct?
Yeah, but I've also used both.
What are your thoughts on Spotify then as a whole?
Yeah, I watched a Mr. Who's the Boss video. I think it came out 2 years ago, but I just watched it. And it was basically all about the pricing debacle that happened between Spotify and Apple Music, where Spotify was a $10 a month plan, and then Apple imposed a new tax in their app store where they took 30%. And then Spotify created this whole campaign saying that their quote-unquote fans, aka customers, were getting screwed over by Apple. And then they had to increase their rate to $13 because they couldn't afford to give like $3 of profit to Apple and lose $3 of profit because they have to pay royalties to artists at devastatingly low numbers. So I don't know why that was an issue, but they also like have a pretty large team, etc. So they increased to $13, and then Apple Music comes out at $10. And then the services are so similar that a lot of people were switching to Apple Music. So then Spotify was like, screw this. Apple was like creating this monopoly type thing. We're going to put our prices back at $10, and we're going to circumvent it by doing it outside of the app store. So now they offer a $10 subscription, but you can't, it's not an in-app purchase anymore, which makes it a little less convenient to like control your account, get in contact with Spotify, etc. But it was a smart move because now they're the price the same way. The last thing I'll say on pricing before I talk about like sound quality and creation and stuff is that Spotify has an ability to use it free with ads. So if you want to stream songs without playing, it's just a much better option. Other main thing to note is that it has both podcasts and music all in one app. So like with Apple Music, if you want to listen to your podcast, you have the separate app, Apple Podcasts, whereas with Spotify, you have your podcast and your music all in one place. I personally do not like that, and I still use Apple Podcasts even though I have Spotify. So I want to ask you, Darsh, do you use Spotify for your podcast too, or do you kind of like the separation? Like, where are you at with that?
Okay, so I basically have all of my podcasts signed in and like subscribed to on my Spotify account, but I also have them subscribed to on my Google Podcast account and on my Apple Podcast account, just because I feel like I'm constantly switching between all the platforms. I don't really have a designated one. And I feel like that's honestly the beauty of podcasting as a whole, because podcasting is free and you can, pretty much anyone can listen to it if you listen to it on any of those platforms. So it's really, really cool, but I don't use any specific podcasting app. I find myself switching between all of them all the time, just because the main podcasts I listen to are available on all of them, including this podcast right here. So if you are listening to this podcast, go check it out on Spotify, Apple Music. You can even listen to it in Buzzsprout.com, where we'll have the links for everything down in the show notes down below.
Yeah, I think the thing with that you just mentioned, though, is that it really doesn't matter where the person listening is listening.
It doesn't.
Like, if you're listening to this right now, it really doesn't matter because it's the same experience. That cannot be said for music, though. I think one of the main selling points of Spotify to me is the curation. Like, it kind of just knows what I'm going to be into. And maybe Apple Music has gotten better, but when I used it, it just was not as smart as like figuring out what I like. And Spotify has years of data on me that Apple Music just couldn't get. And I didn't want to restart the process of like skipping a song, saying I don't like this artist, et cetera, et cetera. Like Spotify already kind of just is in touch with what I'm interested in. And they have like your top songs 2017, 18, 19. Like they have a really large catalog. So that's been a huge selling point for me. But for you, Darsh, I don't think that you've ever given a platform like long enough to get to know you. So have you noticed that curation just isn't on the money for you?
Okay, so the curation, I feel like, is somewhat. So when it comes to Apple Music, I've been on and off Apple Music and Spotify. I pretty much switch almost every other year, which is really, really weird. I guess I just like change. So I like doing that change, like transferring my music. I like finding new music and rediscovering old music. So I don't know exactly in terms of curation how off-brand it is, because I feel like because I'm constantly switching back and forth, it tends to be pretty accurate regardless of which it is, because it's not like I'm making new accounts. I have the same account. It's just I'm choosing to opt in for Apple Music subscription plus, like Apple Music versus not.
Yeah, but do you feel like for myself in 2016, I was listening to totally different artists than I was in 2017 or 2018 or 2019. Like for you, is your, I guess, Did your taste like stay consistent throughout the years?
I feel like my taste as a whole kind of did. And between the years that I switched, nothing really changed that much. I think the biggest change in my music taste has kind of been within the past year or so. I've gotten really into country.
No way, me too.
Really? No way. That's awesome.
Yeah. Who do you listen to?
I started listening to, well, I learned the basics like Luke Combs, Morgan Wallen, a little bit of Sam Hunt, even though he's more pop. I'm trying to find new people and explore Luke Bryan, stuff like that.
Dude, everyone you just named is like on my current playlist. That's so funny.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I love that.
People are like so against country. I think it's like dope.
See, I was so against country for so long. And I think that's actually something I want to ask the audience. Like, if you guys are against country or you guys with country, let us know. I think that'd be a really cool conversation topic. It's a little off. What we're talking. I mean, really.
It's like,
we're talking about Spotify and Apple Music. It's kind of completely on brand.
Yeah, no, it's like, let's tell you about our favorite camera. Plus, what artist are you listening to? But yeah, I got like so much like stuff from my friends about like listening to country, but they have incredible storytelling in country music.
Honestly, yeah. That's one thing I really like about country is its ability to tell stories. It's not as like vague and open-ended as a lot of hip hop music is or a lot of pop music. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of pop music, a lot of hip hop, a lot of music in all genres that tell really good stories. But there's a lot of stuff that's just fluff. A lot of country does tell stories.
Universally, like country music tries to like paint you the picture of like what's going on. And they also like do like the narrative lens where like they tell you about like a person. And then in like the second verse, the person, like they show you the relationship between them and the person. So like maybe the first verse is about their mom. And then the second verse, like you realize that that's what they're talking about.
Yeah. It's honestly pretty dope. The one thing I like about country music that I feel like is underappreciated is they have a certain love for drinking beer as we do for drinking coffee.
Ooh, I know where you're going and I love it.
And as the point comes in every episode, it is time to refill our cups of Joe, our cups of Java, our cups of espresso or cold brew. Sorry, espresso for me, not cold brew for me.
You're the worst.
It's the winter. I need some.
You're just
I need a
traitor,
warm drink.
Man.
It's the winter. All right. But yeah, I think it's time for us to take a little quick break, kind of reset a little bit and then get right back into it. You can expect from the second half a nice conversation about a rumor roundup for the MacBook Pro for 2021, as well as a nice cool segment that we've been bringing back, stuff we like this week. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, I hope you guys got an espresso, a nice warm shot of espresso, not cold brew, espresso. Jacqueline, thoughts? I'm just trying to pick a fight with Jacqueline here. Like, I don't know if anyone else can tell.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty clear that like my affinity for cold brew just like trumps your affinity for espresso, because like you could kind of go either way on it. Although I'll be fully transparent here, I am looking at picking up an espresso machine.
See,
just
espresso?
It's just nice. Like an added thing to have. I mean, I'd probably drink like 2 to 3 cold brews a day, if not more. But sometimes like I'm in the mood for like a hot drink, so I'm not like ruling it out. I just think that cold brew is like much superior.
No, I respect that. I respect your opinions on it. Funny enough, one of my roommates today actually asked me for cold brew. I always have cold brew in my fridge. He asked me if I had any cold brew because he was really craving some. And I was like, yeah, I got you. And I just threw him the bottle. I was like, here you go, buddy. And he took it. And it was great because it was cold brew.
So you were the hookup.
I was the hookup when I came to cold brew. But you know what's been hooked up lately?
Okay.
And what's been all over the interwebs lately that's been really interesting to me? The 2021 MacBook Pro and the rumors behind this magnificent device.
I am so hyped, but I'm also like kind of frustrated because I have the 2016 MacBook Pro, which is like the one with like the keyboard and the touch bar, and it's kind of slowing down. Like I added that camera comparison and it took me probably like all in all like a 20 to 30 hour edit, but my computer was really fighting against me. I could not watch it without there being dropped frames, and I had to watch in like best performance mode, and it was still kind of finicky, and I would make an adjustment and then I'd have to like force quit the program and restart. I would love to upgrade my computer, but the 2021 MacBook Pro sounds so incredible that like I just feel like I have to wait. And if you want to know why I'm like so conflicted about this, Darsh, lay it on. What can we expect from the 2021 MacBook Pro?
All right, so many of you have heard my detrimental stories when it comes to the keyboard of my MacBook Pro and the butterfly switches that did cause me much heartache this past summer. This past August in specific. And the 2021 MacBook Pro is getting rid of that really, really trash keyboard. I'm so excited. Anyway, so the new keyboard that has been implemented within the 2020 MacBook Pros and even the 2019 ones that doesn't feature the butterfly switches essentially are making a comeback. So the keyboard's going to be the same as it currently is on the generation. But what's new? One thing that's new that is currently rumored that I am really excited about is MagSafe. Now, if you don't know what MagSafe is, you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast. I'm joking. MagSafe is basically Apple's old way to charge the computer. So the way the old MacBook Pros and old Macs used to work is that it had a magnetic charger that was proprietary to Apple, and it was the most convenient thing ever because it would just snap onto your computer, start charging it, and if you say, bumped into the wire while it was plugged in, it would just magically fall out and not drag your computer with it. So it was one of those things that was just kind of a really nice convenience that you didn't know how much you enjoyed until it was gone. So MagSafe is making a return. Jacqueline, do you remember MagSafe? Do you miss MagSafe as much as I do? It's one of those things I really do miss.
Like, yeah, I do miss it. But also, like, I was kind of for, like, switching to USB Type-C for charging. That made sense to me at the time. I miss, like, the not, like, hitting into my cable and, like, flipping out every time. But that, to me, was not the biggest thing that they took away. The biggest thing to me that they took away was the SD card slot, which is rumored to be making a return.
So you bring up the SD card slot as the biggest thing that took away from you. The MagSafe was the biggest thing that took away from me. But for most of us listening, yeah, the SD card is most likely making a return, which is super, super stoked. I'm super, super stoked for. Jacqueline, do you still use SD cards?
Yeah.
Because I know you have all your fancy gear. You're full YouTuber here. You're using all the fancy gear and stuff. No, so using an SD card, how many dongles do you carry around on a daily basis? And how many of them have SD cards slots on them?
So I carry one, and it's the Hutu one that I've like kind of raved about like in every single thing that I've done talking about the MacBook Pro. It has an SD card slot, 3 USB-A's, it has an HDMI. Like, it's loaded. So it hasn't been a huge deal, but something that used to happen that still happens occasionally is that I'll hit it out by accident because it's like separate from the computer, and then like my footage will not import properly, and it wastes a lot of time. So having it like built into the computer is kind of huge, and it also makes it a lot more convenient to not have to like bring around an extra thing, because then I kind of have to like bring a computer case or something with me.
Oh, 100%.
And it's funny because when they took it off, people were like, oh, like they're just leading us into the future, like the future needs compromises. And like, I see that with certain ports that they took away, but the SD card slot is so built into like a professional's career that I don't think that we're going to see its absence for like the next 5 years. And even like the workarounds of like plugging in your camera via USB Type-C are just not nearly as convenient as an SD card.
Oh, 100%. I think the SD card is one of the ports that overall a lot of people were really upset about, because it wasn't really the same as just taking away a USB port or taking away an HDMI port. Because here's the thing, with USB-C, because of how versatile the port itself is, you can effectively get a USB Type-C to HDMI cable. You can get a USB-C charging cable, USB-C data drive that has USB-C on one side and USB-A on the other side. You can have all these different devices that can replace what you currently have, but there's no replacement for an SD card that works with USB-C, other than just getting a dongle. But besides the dongles, because the dongles do really suck, I have a solid 3 or 4 of them, like a couple of USB-A to USB-C ones, plus USB-A to SD card, all these different ones like that. But apparently there have been small rumors is inkling around that there are going to be more than just the USB-C ports on the next MacBook Pro, not including the SD card's return. So we're thinking and we're looking at potentially USB-A port, maybe an Ethernet port, maybe something that we haven't gotten access to yet that's coming now and coming soon. I think that's going to be really, really interesting.
Wow, I'm just looking this up, Darsh. MagSafe was released in 2006, so it's kind of been a huge part of the lineup. It makes sense that they brought MagSafe to the iPhone first, because I think that they're going to like try to like brand this like MagSafe line.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And like have every device eventually charged via quote unquote MagSafe, even though it's all different.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. They're going to bring MagSafe back. So like MagSafe's been gone, right?
No, yeah. But I mean like, because they just brought MagSafe to iPhone. Mm-hmm. So I think eventually we're going to get a portless iPhone, and then they're going to be like, everything charges via MagSafe, even though the MagSafe on iPhone is very different than the MagSafe on Mac.
Oh, yeah. No, in terms of branding as a whole, for sure. They're going to go MagSafe on laptop, MagSafe on phone. That way, there's no USB-C fight anymore. Like, you know, there's been like a USB-C fight. Like, oh, the iPad and the MacBook charges with USB-C, but the iPhone is Lightning. Why can't we get USB-C on the iPhone? No. Now it's going to be MagSafe everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like MagSafe eventually in the iPads too in the back, and eventually I think they're going to get rid of the Lightning cable. But it's weird because the MagSafe on iPhone is a totally different contraption than the MagSafe on Mac, so it still won't be like a universal charger.
Yeah, also I'm pretty sure the MagSafe on the new iPhones are incredibly strong, and the MagSafe on the MacBooks weren't meant to be incredibly strong. They were meant to be somewhat loose so that you could effectively walk into the wire and the wire would just fall out. So this would be a very interesting implementation that I'm very, very excited for in terms of the new MacBook Pro 2021. Jacqueline, I have one very, very big question for you.
Okay.
And if you can answer it in the fewest number of words.
Okay. Oh, no.
Is the touch bar worth it?
Kind of.
Okay. Because apparently the touch bar might be taken out.
Dude, that was kind of a cop. That was a cop and answer on my part, because it leaves just so much vagueness. I personally like it. I like it for like volume control, brightness control, quickly finding emojis, things like that. But I'm not like one of those people that's like, oh, the touch bar is so useless, I hate this thing. Like, I personally like it, but it was never realized. Things that they thought it could do, it never did for me. Like, I never used it in Final Cut for anything more than volume adjustment, brightness control. I'll still be sad to see it go, though, because the three things that I just mentioned, I actually love, and I use them every single day. You're also using a MacBook. So what about you?
My thing with the Touch Bar is this. I think the Touch Bar is very useful in terms of volume and brightness. I feel like it has a certain level of just, it just feels so natural just to, it feels like you're using your phone when it comes to just kind of raising and lowering that bar for volume and for brightness. And it's just so useful when it comes to emojis too, like when you're typing on your Mac, whether it be on Twitter or on your iMessages. But I don't see it as that useful. Like, I use an external keyboard for my day-to-day, and I don't find myself missing the Touch Bar now that I'm using this external keyboard. The only thing I miss from the Touch Bar is using emojis, and that's about it. So I'm not necessarily upset with the Touch Bar being taken out, but I know that there are some people who do have it really, really well integrated into their everyday. So I'd be very excited and interested to see how Apple does go with taking the Touch Bar out, if that's what the route they decide to take for this
year. Oh, like what they're going to say?
Yeah, like what they're going to say. Like, how does Apple go back on something like that?
Yes,
how do they go back
I
on the Touch
with
Bar?
You. Yeah, and how do they go back on the MagSafe thing? Made such a big deal about USB Type-C.
Exactly, because they're saying USB Type-C was the future, and now they're going back on that. Like, what does that mean for the rest of the lineup? Does it mean Apple's going to start kind of reneging on previous things again? That's why these rumors are so interesting, because they're essentially saying, like, Apple is going to be copping out onto what they said years ago, and they're going to be taking a step back, which is very not Apple-like.
It's basically like a 2015 Mac with, like, 2021 specs.
Which to a lot of people is very, very appealing.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is, if they're going to use M1.
Yeah, it's going to be M1. It's going to be M2. Like, what is it going to be in terms of silicon, right?
But is it going to be like Intel stuff? Like, are they going to launch an Intel version because not all apps are supported? Are they going to go full in with their own Apple silicon? Like, what's that going to be like for performance? Probably huge. I mean, these are all the questions like racing through my head because I really want to upgrade, but this is like right around the corner. But on the other hand, like if I'm producing, let's say a video a week, two videos a week, shouldn't I save myself the time? You know what I mean? Like, I'm really conflicted. Like, do I spend $4,000 right now and look at it as like an investment and paying myself via time and then spend that again 6 months from now, which like feels like it's just a huge waste? Or do I just hold out for this because it is going to be a huge improvement? I'm not sure.
See, that's the thing. So a lot of people have talked to me about it. And I think one of the things that I've been very clear on saying is just wait and see what they do come out with, because there's a bunch of other rumors too. And the ones that we talked about are just the ones that I think that we're really, really interested in. So there's other things just for a quick list off. So there's going to be a 14-inch and a 16-inch variant of the MacBook Pro. We're looking at more of a squared off design. And overall, the design is going to stay somewhat the same. It's going to be a mixture of the old 2015 style MacBook Pros and the current MacBook Pros kind of mushed together. And I think this would be really, really interesting year.
Yeah, Dersh, just last note on this.
Yeah.
Do you have like a release date when you think it's coming out?
Ooh, I would put my money on either WWDC or October, because it's either they're going to release it when they announced the next Mac OS and they're going to just unveil it as they're going to unveil the MacBook Pro. I think they're going to unveil one type of Mac at that event. I don't know which Mac it's going to be yet. I think it could be the Pro. And if they don't do it then I think they're going to do it in October. I haven't heard of any rumors of when it will be announced, however. These are just my speculations.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know if I'm going to be able to wait a year. So I guess time will tell. We'll keep you guys posted on the podcast. We're getting up to the point of the podcast, though, which is maybe my favorite. Stuff we like this week. Darsh, I'm throwing it to you. What's one thing you like this week?
Okay, so I started a new TV show on Netflix. It's called Superstore.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I've never heard of it. I just started it. And it's honestly fantastic. It's a sitcom. The entire show is basically based around these retail workers. They work in a superstore called Cloud9. And that superstore, essentially, it resembles like a Walmart Target type experience. And it's just basically all like the foolishness and like the fun stuff that comes out of working retail. Like, it's very goofy in terms of what they do. Like, they do a bunch of stuff that's really goofy in like the retail environment. And I don't know, it's just really lighthearted and fun and funny. Highly recommend it.
Is it like a sitcom like How I Met Your Mother, or is it like a different type?
It's like a Brooklyn Nine-Nine type sitcom.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I must check that
out. I would
compare
the two of them.
Darsh, you've mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine so many times, I must check it out. Someone tweeted me on Twitter, there was a cold brew meme from it. So that's one thing I like this week, obviously, cold brew. The thing that I want to say that I actually like this week revolving around that is the love that I've been getting on Twitter around cold brew. Anytime I post about cold brew now, many people shoot me back them drinking cold brew or like a gif around it. And it makes my heart happy. So that's definitely my first thing for this week.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a really, really good one. You should definitely check out Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I don't know about the cold brew reference, but I think that would be something really, really cool to check out. So if you see it, please do let me know. I would love to check it out. Another thing on my what I liked this week, something I liked, I've been getting really, really back into the music I used to listen to when I was in high school. And one of my favorite artists from high school was Chance the Rapper. And I started listening to him again. I started listening to his album, Coloring Book, again. It's a pretty old, I think it's like a couple years old now. Yeah, I just basically started re-listening to it. And I've just been obsessed with it. I've been listening to it every day in the morning. It's been one of my favorite things to listen to. So if you guys haven't heard it, go check it out. I highly, 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 highly recommend it.
That was a lot of highlies.
Yes, very, a lot of highlies. A very, a lot of highlies.
I'm going to have to check it out. I've watched him on on SNL or something, and I thought he was super talented, so I definitely want to listen to more. My last one for this week is going to be this artist called Lorde. She's super popular, so I'm sure a lot of people know her. I, like, just discovered her music and, like, really got into, like, listening to her entire catalog. She's great. Her lyricism and her storytelling and stuff, it reminded me a lot of Taylor Swift, who's also an incredible artist. And yeah, so that would be my last recommendation for this week.
Alrighty, and I think I'm going to end off mine as well. Just one more thing. Considering how I switched to Spotify, and that was a conversation we did have this week, I do want to bring up a Spotify playlist that I follow that I think you guys might enjoy. It's called Morning Coffee. It's a playlist curated by Spotify, and I have honestly been in love with it, mostly because of this. So I'll wake up in the morning, I'll make my coffee, I'll come sit down, and I'll light my brand new espresso bean candle that I love ever so much, and it'll make my room smell like a coffee house. And then I'll play this one playlist, and it feels like I'm just at a nice, casual, fun, really relaxing type coffee house, and I'm just doing my work, getting stuff done. It's a really, really nice vibe. I highly recommend it. Go check it out. It's called Morning Coffee.
I am 100% going to do that, and I'm stoked about it. That's it for this week, though. I want to thank Adil Constantine for our incredible intro and outro music. As always, you killed it. Luke, I want to first apologize, because if Darsh and I are being totally honest here, we have messed up so many times this episode. I don't know what's going on with us. We're just very off. If this episode sounded good and was coherent to you, it's because Luke was incredible and edited it. And he is not only a really good friend, but an incredible editor. He does all the editing and graphic design for this podcast. So thank you, Luke. Everyone, we will catch you next week, Monday, 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. And so much to talk about then.
Sounds like a plan. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you guys, or hear you guys, or you'll listen to us next week. This is what we mean, guys. This is what we mean. Case in point.
Case in point of what was happening all episode.
Case in point. All right, guys. We'll catch you guys next week. Later.
Bye.